Welcome to Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're here to render judgment on the worlds of celebrity, pop culture, television, and fashion.
Strap yourselves in for some hardcore opinionating, darlings.
This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
With Tom and Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the T in your T-Lo, Tom Fitzgerald. I'm here with the Low in your T-Lo, Lorenzo Marquez, my lovely husband.
Hello.
How are you, Lorenzo?
Yeah, great.
Great? Happy?
Great.
Zippity-doo-dah?
Yeah. I feel great, and I get excited because the weather is getting colder. And,
you just love this time of year, don't you?
Oh, I love it. Because I pull out all my favorite blankets, mm-hmm. You know.
And he's all ready to get the Christmas decorations out.
I know. I'm excited about it. Yeah.
Yes, I know. You're Mr. Holidays.
I am, in a way.
You are, in a way. What else? That's it for the personal side of T-Lo. No, we don't have any other personal news this week. No. We're still in the middle of painting.
Yeah.
I believe we informed you about 6 weeks ago that we were taking on this project.
But we decided we were going to take our time. Yes.
We're really taking our time.
Yeah,
but
that's what slowly
but
decided.
Surely, the results are spectacular.
Yes. Well, that's the thing. Because we usually paint too quickly, I think.
No, I really wanted to take my time.
And I'm very, anal about, trimming and all that, mm-hmm. and then you do it quickly and then you're done, you're happy about it, and then you sit down to watch TV and you start looking around
for the next 5 years. You're looking at some splotch.
I know, you're looking at all those mistakes and all those wrong lines and trimmings, and I'm like, oh, and then it drives you crazy. So I rather take my time and make sure everything is perfect.
Yeah, that is the value of age and wisdom.
That's low to a T.
Yeah, that's low to a T. Oh, look at you. Aww. So we are going to devote the second half of this podcast to discussing last night's, which aired in the UK, but is not airing in America for another week. Blah, blah, blah. Very complicated. Last night's Drag Race UK, which was when the final four went to the final three. Now, because we're getting into the home stretch here, it's hard to talk about these episodes without spoiling them.
Right.
So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the episode in the second half of this podcast after we come back from the break, and leave it largely spoiler in terms of the outcome.
Spoiler free.
Well, we'll talk about what the challenge was and how the queens were and blah, blah, blah. But then we're going to let you know, so you can just basically turn it off.
Run away.
Yeah, when we get to the part where we discuss who won, who lip-synced, and who went home. Because it's important. We're heading into
the finale.
Well, it's not important.
The grand finale.
Yeah. But yeah, it's the finale, and there's no point in talking about this stuff if you can't talk about the ending of it. So that's the plan for the second half of this podcast. There is kind of no plan for the first half of this podcast, although we are going to bounce around on a few topics. Mm-hmm. Not the least of which, in fact, the most oppressively overriding of which are the impeachment hearings, which we're not actually talking about them.
No, but we're listening to them.
Something? I am not.
I am.
You are.
I am.
I can hear them in your office, and that's fine. I find them...
I feel like if I don't, then I'm missing out on something.
I understand that. I do, and I feel like maybe I am missed. But I do get the reports, and I do watch the clips, but I'm writing all day. I can't.
No, I understand.
It's bad enough going on Twitter and constantly being sucked into. But I'm not saying this because I don't want to be informed. I do want to be informed. But this is the whole reason why we're bringing this up. We're talking about, as we often have in the last 3 or 4 years, of the position we're in our jobs, in our roles as, entertainment and culture and fashion bloggers, when everyone's attention is pointed in one direction, seemingly, and that direction is important. How do you do your job? How do you stay on course? What is your job in that situation? So it's not that I don't want to remain... I get caught up at the end of every day, but I cannot be sucked into the minute-by-minute, blow-by-blow accounts of this, or I can't get our work done.
Right. I like to listen to them and usually watch the video on Twitter, because first I want to see who they are, see their faces.
Right.
And listen to them. And one of the things I actually mentioned to you that I like about it is that it's how eloquent these people are, how experienced they are, and how much they know about what they do. And it comes across when they're answering all these questions. And you're like, wow, we're so used to people who can't even form a sentence today. And then when you actually listen to someone making a very valid argument and forming long sentences. It's just like, wow, these people are great. They're right. doing a great job, and they're going through this horrible corruption issues that we're going. I mean, everything that we're going on that's going on right now, and it's just, you know, it's their job. They're trying to do their job, and they're facing so many issues in the process. Anyway, it's interesting. I think that's why I like to listen to them talk and answer the questions.
But these things come up in our work all the time about when and how we continue to publish when everyone's attention is focused in one area. Or, like, for instance, there was another school shooting yesterday. Do we continue to publish and tweet our way through that about people appearing on red carpets? We have, in the past, I believe the Newtown massacre, which was horrifying. Mm-hmm. We were tweeting before we heard the news about it, and we got slammed on Twitter for it. And ever since then, we've been a little cautious, you know, making sure that we don't.
Yeah.
You know, the bottom line is people often think that enterprises like ours are supposed to just shut down when something's going on. That's not how it works. I mean, do you ask all the restaurants to close because there's impeachment hearings or a school shooting?
Do you not go to work because something horrible happened?
Right. So there's a function here, and that function is to be frivolous and to be distracting in a world that's stressful. Or when stressful events are going on, or in the case of something like the impeachment hearings, where you might just get sucked into it for a really long time, and just that cat is going to knock over that candlestick.
I know.
Tab is right moving here.
Moving the candlestick.
Yeah, moving the candlestick.
Every time we...
Tab in the dining room with the candlestick. It's like a game of Clue.
We usually record the podcast in our dining room.
At our dining room table. We used to do it in the living room table, but now
and
we...
So it's a huge table, and then...
It's not that huge. We're not living in Downton Abbey.
No, but it's big. It's a big table.
It's 8.
Anyway, no, 12, actually. The cats are always on the table. You know, they walk around sometimes, or sometimes they just sit there and watch us record the whole thing.
We should add that if we were the type of people that ate at our dining room table with any sort of regularity, our cats would not be on it, but we don't. We never, ever, ever eat at our dining room table.
No, we never do, yeah.
We don't. We work at it, but we don't eat at it. Well, I mean, it's just the two of us, and we're on different schedules and whatever.
Anyway,
we're urban, childless gays.
The bottom line is that we have to do our jobs like everybody else does.
Yes.
That's the bottom line here. And to a certain extent, I understand not tweeting too much. Depending on the case,
I think there's some national tragedy going on.
Case by case, yes. I felt horror about the shooting yesterday, and it because of the impeachment, you know, tweets, live tweets, and all that. Not a lot of people talked about it.
No, well, and we're all getting so coarsened.
Kind of, yeah. Anyway, but so yeah, I understand not tweeting too much, but at the same time, we're doing our jobs here, and people do appreciate that they have a place to go to if they don't feel like. I mean, you can do both. You know, you can.
And not everybody's really all that interested in staying abreast of these things. No judgments on our part, and our job is to entertain everybody who wants to be entertained.
Right. We have to keep going in a way for our own sake and for the sake of our readers.
Right.
Anyway,
that was something that we just had to learn over the years and come to terms with.
Right,
that,
right.
You know, on days when other people think you might not, you shouldn't be working. Those are actually some of the most important days when you should be working. Anyway, not to overstate, we're not doing God's work here.
No,
I mean,
not like
completely
we're saving lives, going to
the
hospital.
No. It's literal frivolities, and 90% of our content is disposable. Very, very aware of where we sit on the culture chain, I think. So moving away from that into... Well, you know what? Before we move away from that, I do think perhaps we should be talking a little bit about my favorite deodorant, Native Deodorant, which I have been using since this summer. And this portion of the podcast is being sponsored by Native. At Native, they create safe, simple, effective products that people use in the bathroom every day. They create products with trusted ingredients and trusted performance. Not convinced? Check out the 9,000 five-star reviews from their customers. Their products are formulated without aluminum, parabens, and talc. It's filled with ingredients found in nature, such as coconut oil, shea butter, moisturizer, and emollient, and tapioca starch, which absorbs wetness. Big one. Never test on animals. Big one. I mean, aside from the fact that the deodorant smells great and it works and it's sensitive to your skin and all that,
right.
The fact that they don't test on animals, it's a big reason
plus, yes.
To go native. And there's free shipping and returns. And it works. Making the switch to an aluminum-free deodorant does not mean having to sacrifice on product performance. And people love them. With over 9,000 five-star reviews, you can check them out in the Today Show, Elle Magazine, Pop Sugar, Refinery29, to name a few. It's worth it. Native is aluminum-free, safe, and effective. It comes in a wide variety of enticing scents for men and women. Plus, they release new limited edition seasonal scents throughout the year. They also offer an unscented formula and baking soda free formula for those with sensitivities. Classic deodorant scents include coconut and vanilla, the most popular scent, lavender and rose, cucumber and mint, and eucalyptus and mint, which is the one that I'm using. And I love no risk to try. They offer free returns and exchanges in the USA. So for 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com. That's NATIVEDEODORANT, nativedeodorant.com. And use promo code TLO during checkout for 20% off your first purchase. nativedeodorant.com, promo code TLO, 20% off your first purchase. Thank you, Native. It works. Okay. Now on to frivolity, pure frivolity. I don't even have heavy thoughts about this, except I was so bemused that other people do. Harry and Meghan, it was announced this week. I mean, those two, they are drama queens and they do like to play the press. Let's just face that right there. Harry is his mother's son to a T. He has this love-hate relationship with the press, I think, because he does hate them, but he's also kind of in love with the attention. And I think that's true of him way more than it's true of her, which people tend to accuse her of all sorts of shady, shallow behavior. But I honestly think 90% of what they are doing as a couple has to do with Harry's issues, not hers. Anyway, they announced this week that they're coming to America for Christmas. They will not be spending Christmas at Sandringham with the royal family, and shock and drama and editorializing in the British press and all kinds of social media brouhaha. And it's just so silly to me. Number one, as many, many people have pointed out, Kate and William did not spend every Christmas at Sandringham either. And to everybody else out there who's an adult with children, how often do you spend the entire Christmas holidays with your grandmother? Like the entire holiday. That's kind of a weird expectation that they're all supposed to be. I know she's the queen and everything, but, you know, they're her grandkids who have kids of their own. It's like, let them have their holiday.
Well, not to mention the fact that her family, her mother, lives in another country. So
Right. I didn't think there was any great obligation that they had to be with the queen at Sandringham for Christmas. But, of course, people just love to get all up in arms over every single thing these two do. I'm loving it. I hope they work the American press. I hope they're seen. I don't know where Doria lives. Does she live?
No, I don't remember.
I keep hearing people say California, which probably makes sense. I would love to see them like getting papped, you know, in California with little Archie, and work the press. Get out there and work the American press. She is beloved here, and they probably just want to get, you know.
Right.
To be in a place where they're not going to be hounded the way the British press hounds them. People have been saying for a while that they're going to wind up living here to avoid all that stuff. I don't believe that to be true. I don't think
that's possible.
I don't think Harry has that much freedom.
Right.
Harry has some freedom because he's not going to be king. Right, but Charles isn't going to be like, you're done. You don't have to do any royal engagements. Just go live in America with your movie star. It's not happening. And then they talk about maybe they'll move to Canada or maybe they'll move to Australia, like Commonwealth countries or whatever. It's not happening. They're still finding their way. Anyway, I'm talking.
That's it. That's pretty much it. You said everything. I mean, there's always a story with them. And I agree with you that they kind of, I don't know if they seek attention, but they don't give a damn. And in that way, you do get the attention of the press. You know what I mean? Like, because they don't follow all the rules.
I mean, Diana was this way where she could argue that she wasn't seeking attention, but it was like, well, come on, Diana, you do things to ensure it. And that's typical of Harry and Meghan as well, where you can, you know, back away protesting the whole time. But they do. There is a certain level of attention. There's a certain level of they are asserting themselves in a role. We've talked about this before, and if all you have to do is watch The Crown, which, I mean, The Crown is a soap opera drama version of their lives, but all of that stuff is actually based on real events and happenings. So, you know, the Duke of Windsor did have to give up his throne because he wanted to assert himself with an American divorcee, and Margaret did have to give up the great love of her life, and, you know, that sort of thing.
They do make sacrifices.
Exactly. And every time someone asserts themselves in that family, you know, asserts a little bit of independence against their role, the press, the public, and the family all react in very predictable ways. So, and I think Harry's very aware of this. I think when you're like the fourth generation to see this play out, when you saw it play out with Margaret, when you saw it play out with, you know, Edward, he didn't see it, but he knew it about Edward. You can see how it's playing out with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the reason why they fight so hard against,
right.
You know, why they initiated lawsuits against the press, several lawsuits against the press, and they establish ground rules counter to how the royals are expected to act, especially on their last tour. They didn't want people using their titles and that sort of thing. And
it's, yeah,
you're free to do these things. As far as I'm concerned, who am I to say how the British royals are supposed to act?
You have to expect some level of backlash. I mean, come on. And because you're a public figure, you do need the press, especially if you're involved with so many, you know, organizations and
right.
causes and all that. I mean, you do need the press. So it's a complicated dynamic, I
yeah,
think.
It is.
You know, where do you establish that line that they don't cross?
Right.
And then, and to a certain extent, you let them cross a little.
So
it's complicated that they need the press. So, and I don't know, I don't think they seem to understand them that yet.
Need the press. The royals need the press because if they don't have the press on their side, they won't have the public mm-hmm. on their side, and they won't be royals for much longer. I don't want to give any, well, it's just a line, and it's not embargoed. Olivia Colman has a spectacular line about the wall between, the protocol wall between the royal family and their subjects, and she says something to, I can't remember what the first part of the sentence is. We don't do it to keep ourselves, oh, she does, that's what it is. We don't do these things to keep ourselves apart. We do these things to keep ourselves alive. If there isn't support for the royal mm-hmm. family in the public and in the
what's
press,
the point of having
there won't be
them?
A royal
right,
family.
Exactly.
And I don't
what's
mean,
the point of having them?
Elizabeth was being hyperbolic, or Olivia Colman was. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be killed, although The Crown does make the point that if you grew up in a European royal family in the 20th century, you saw your cousins and your aunts and uncles get killed. So they know that there is such a thing as revolution. They know that it's even if that seems crazy now, it's drilled into like the 90 whatever year old monarch who was currently sitting on the throne, that you act a certain way, otherwise the crowd turns against you, and sometimes they turn against you violently. And she has uncles and aunts and stuff who died.
That's a little too much, but
you know it's true. Though.
I know, but I don't think we're.
I think we're there. No, I'm not suggesting. No, I think you misunderstand. I'm not suggesting that they are at risk of being killed. I'm suggesting they have a 92-year-old matriarch at the head of the
family.
They
have history. Yeah.
Who?
Uh-huh.
Who grew up thinking
this way.
And it's how she expects all of them to act.
Mm-hmm.
It drives how the family acts.
Right.
Trauma in families, this echoes down in generations. Everybody knows that. And it affects how the family acts for generations mm-hmm. to come. So, yes, I don't think it's too much. I disagree with you, Mr. Lorenzo. Editorializing from the corner over there.
Speaking of The Crown, the new season premieres this Sunday.
And we'll have
recaps. A ton of posts about
it.
Yeah, we're going to do the costumes. We're going to do the episodes one by one. We're going to be covering it a lot. It's a great season, as I mentioned before. It's my favorite season. The costumes are amazing. The cinematography, it's absolutely beautiful. The music is beautiful.
Right.
And the stories they tell, I don't want to get into all the details, spoil anything, but the topics of each episode, let me put it this way, they are very interesting.
They are.
And some of them I didn't know anything about, had to Google it, and
we talked about this last week.
Was fascinated by them. Yeah, they're great. I actually enjoy every situation, every piece of history they cover.
And while we're on the topic of recaps and stuff like that, we are aware that we missed, a couple people asked. And I felt bad that we missed last week's Watchmen recap, because Watchmen is one of those shows I could feel it happening where you post the first week, it doesn't get much response. You post the second week, and then by the third and fourth week, you're like, oh, okay, people are really reading these.
They're like, where are they?
So, but we, for various reasons, we had to miss it. But there will be a review of this week's episode up on Sunday or Monday morning. I promise that. We're playing catch up on a lot of stuff. And next week, I'm so nervous, scared, but literally this time next week, as we are recording this, we will actually be in a recording studio recording our audio version of our book.
Our first album.
Yes, recording our first album. We're going to be harmonizing like Destiny's Child. So that's crazy. That's completely crazy. But I do want to say, listen. Well, you do listen. You hear my cartoon rambling voice every week. And I just want to say, we have worked really hard. And I'm actually really proud of where we are. I can't make predictions of what I'm going to sound like when I'm in a studio, but I don't sound like this. That's my point. And I thought of that later, where I was like, the difference is, number one, the huge difference is I'm not coming up with anything off the top of my head. It's all right in front of me.
Right.
And we wrote it, so I know the cadence and I know the rhythm and everything. So I am enjoying it. It's interesting. I've really learned a new skill this month that I've never even thought I was going to learn, which is how to read publicly.
Right. You can't just read it.
No, you can't just read it. And I've done public readings of our previous book, but those are brief snippets. And to be honest, they were 4 or 5 years ago. I haven't done it much since then.
There's a lot involved, like where you breathe and where you stop,
where you pause,
you know, all that stuff.
The quotes.
Right, yes.
I just am like, oh my God, I don't know if I had known I was going to read this book for the audio. I don't know if I would have quoted so many drag queens, because you've got to... You know, you've got to do the...
You don't do their voice.
You don't do their voice, especially since a lot of them are Black and Latinx drag queens. Like, I am not going to try and make myself sound like Crystal LaBeija, because that is borderline, like, minstrel shows. You can't do that. But you have to find this sort of, like, balance. Like, how do I do that? How do I quote RuPaul's, like, she already done had herses without doing RuPaul, you know? So that part is fun and interesting, and we're looking forward to that.
Yes.
Now I want to move on to Disney Plus, which was the big entertainment story of the week,
which we tried last night.
But before we get into all that, let's also take a moment to talk about our luggage. Away, thoughtful luggage for modern travel. I feel like Away, who has been a good friend to this podcast for so long, has just exploded. Like, you see Away ads everywhere. People talk about their Away luggage all the time. And I'm like, yes, well, we were on the ground floor with Away.
Hello.
Because we got their luggage a while back. Away creates thoughtful products designed to change how you see the world. They started with the perfect suitcase, crafted with features that make travel more seamless. Now they offer a range of essentials that solve real travel problems. So all you have to think about is where you're headed next, because getting away means getting more out of every trip to come. Away knows that everyone has a different travel style. That's why they make their carry-on in an array of colors, 2 sizes and 2 materials, a strong yet flexible polycarbonate and an anodized aluminum. Did you hear me say those words? Anodized aluminum, polycarbonate. Thank you very much. The carry-on, it's a lightweight and durable shell that's made to last for a lifetime of travel. There's a 100-day trial that lets you try any Away product on the road. A limited lifetime warranty means they'll fix or replace your bag if it ever gets damaged. There's a built-in compression pad that helps you pack more. A range of unique personalization offerings, including hand painting, 4 360-degree spinner wheels that guarantee a smooth ride. And seriously, you can push this thing through an airport with your pinky. It just glides. TSA-approved combination locks keep your belongings safe. There's an optional ejectable battery to keep your phone charged. Literally my favorite feature. And a removable laundry bag to help separate dirty clothes from clean clothes. And their bigger carry-on has most of the same elements, just sized to make the most of the overhead bin. Suitcases are designed to last a lifetime, but if any part of your suitcase breaks, Away's standout customer service team will arrange to have it fixed or replaced ASAP. And there's a 100-day trial on everything Away makes. Take it out on the road and live with it. Travel with it. Get lost with it. If you decide it's not for you, you can return any non-personalized item.
That is amazing.
For a full refund. I agree. No ifs, ands, or asterisks.
I remember the time when you bought luggage and you know, you had to like push it around at the store for like 5 seconds and decide.
Right, right, right.
Now, this time you have all this time to just travel with it. And if it's not for you, return it. But I guarantee you're going to love it. And then you keep it.
There's free shipping on any way order within the contiguous U.S., Europe, and Australia. And you can get away offline, too. Want to see it for yourself? You can shop everything away at their stores in New York, Austin, L.A., San Francisco, Boston, Chicago, and London. So, for $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/TLO20. That's awaytravel.com/TLO20. And use promo code TLO20 during checkout for $20 off a suitcase. Thank you, Away. All right, moving on, Disney Plus. Okay, so I'm really guiding things this week, but you're just, you know. Mm-hmm. Just nodding along.
I think it's a very interesting topic, and it goes beyond Disney, but it exploded with Disney, I think.
It launched this week. I had no intention of signing on to it, and as critics, I never even thought to. Actually, I don't know if we have contacts at Disney at all, but I never thought to ask for like screening access.
We do have contact, but anyway,
I guess we could have done that. Because when they announced the roster, when they announced like what was going to be on the streaming service, and it's massive, of course, because it's Disney. They have a massive library. I was like, well, that's really cute, but I'm not the audience. Even though they were going to have the entire Marvel library and the entire Star Wars library, both of which I'm big fans of, but I also own half of those movies on physical media already. Or I own digital copies of a lot of those movies. So it's like, well, that's not enough reason for me to sign on. Then it dropped. And, you know, it depends, of course, who you're reading, what your social media experience is. But for us, for our line of work, it suddenly everybody was talking about it. There was no other conversation going on among TV or cultural critics. It was just Disney Plus, Disney Plus, Disney Plus. And I sort of felt this when Apple TV launched earlier this month with like Jennifer Aniston's and Reese Witherspoon's new show, which again, we didn't ask to get screeners to that and we didn't buy into it. But I'm really starting to feel that splintering of the culture. I guess you and I have been pretty good about holding the fort down. But now that it's splintering even further, I'm like, do I really need to follow Apple TV and Disney Plus and CBS All Access? And there's a Warner Brothers DC one. And
there's Facebook Plus. There are all these
Facebook
pluses now.
Exactly. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah. I do feel like it's nice to have all these options where you can go sign up and then get whatever you want. We were going through the Disney stuff last night because we downloaded and...
Because we did sign up. That was we signed up.
Yeah. And then we were, okay, this looks great. It's not my kind of movies or, you know, entertainment. But I can see a lot of people just, you know, loving all this. I think the issue...
It seems so limited to me.
Well,
I'm just not
that's
a Disney
my issue.
Person.
The thing is that it's great that we have all this stuff online. You know, you have Netflix. You have all these things. You have iTunes. And no longer iTunes. It's called something else or whatever.
Apple Music.
Thank you. But... The thing is that they don't have everything, and they only have most of what they have for a short period of time. I mean,
they exert control over
right,
what they
and
have.
Or they exert control of it. And then you see Netflix, for example. I mean, how many great stuff? Last night, actually, I was looking for stuff that I had watched a long time ago, and I was looking for Israeli movies. And then 80% of what I have watched in the past, it's no longer there.
Right.
So things just disappear.
Right.
And then you know you don't have access to them. And then I fear that's the future with digital stuff, that unless you buy it for you,
right,
as you have,
which
things would just
they're not
disappear.
Making DVD players for much longer, so I don't even know what I'm doing
so
with my
DVDs. So
these
big companies, they make decisions, you know, what they keep, what they not keep, what they bring back. And then, you know, you have... If you really like a movie or if you really like something and you want to watch it again, it's no longer there for you.
Not only that, they are...
Or they decide when they're going to show it.
They are
bring it
suppressing...
Back.
Like, for instance, Disney bought up 20th Century Fox. It has their whole library. Matt Zoller Seitz wrote a really widely shared article in Vulture this past like a couple weeks ago, actually, about how Disney is suppressing their 20th Century Fox library from being shown in repertory houses and stuff like that. So films right. like Alien, the Alien trilogy, which still gets shown in rep houses and art houses and stuff like that, is slowly becoming unavailable. Right. And it's very alarming as our culture, literally our culture, is being bought up by a smaller and smaller number of multinational enormous corporations. It's right. like something out of Blade Runner. And they are exerting enormous control over what we understand about and what parts of our culture we're going to get exposed to.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Our
billionaires are making these right. decisions.
Our entertainment history or archive is becoming shorter and shorter and shorter.
Right. I mean, Netflix doesn't have movies from prior to...
No.
They only have a handful of movies prior to 1995, right. actually.
Thank God for TCM. Without TCM, I wouldn't be watching all these old
right.
movies.
But
I mean,
TCM
but that's my
is,
personal, you know, preference.
It's the
you
old
movie. I don't like that kind of movie.
It's the old people's channel, though. I mean, it's not a channel
you.
That young people watch.
Thank you for that observation. Anyway.
It's true.
But I see that a lot happening with Netflix and all that. They just... You don't see them anymore. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I'll never watch that movie again.
Yeah.
Unless I... It has happened many, many times that I love that movie so much, I want to watch it again. And I have to, like, search on the internet, where is that movie?
Right.
Because it's gone. So I can watch it again. And, you know, you can't buy everything.
Pretty soon. It's interesting how... and actually, Matt Zollersites has said this, how his thoughts about pirating... mm-hmm. films and TV shows has changed because it's becoming almost this necessary form of outlaw behavior because all this stuff is being suppressed and locked away.
Right.
So the only exposure to it is underground exposure.
Which I don't like.
Which keep, yeah. although I don't like, it's not the optimal situation, but it's keeping cultural history alive uh-huh. for people who want to seek it out, even if it's not easy to get to and certainly not legal to get to.
Imagine if we didn't have YouTube and all those little small archives, small, you know, videos and stuff.
But you can expect Disney will be cracking down on that stuff more and more as their library gets bigger and bigger.
Yes, yes. It's
the
control.
Just really scary. And I'm not the first to say this. I'm not even the 1,000th to say this. I don't see how the current economic model for streaming platforms is sustainable. You're going to be getting smaller and smaller chunks of the audience because people just can't buy into. There's Hulu, there's Vudu, there's Netflix. There's
so you're gonna spend like $100 a month on subscriptions. You know
that used to be called cable TV.
Yeah,
that's the thing, and everyone keeps making this argument lately where it's like, well, why are we doing it this way when we had an economic model that actually worked for 30 years, which was cable TV. You mm-hmm. bought into a plan that allowed you an array of channels
right.
in a package.
Now you have to have every single one of them separately.
Right.
Which is crazy.
Right now we have Netflix, Hulu, Vudu, CBS All Access, and Disney Plus. I don't think we're getting Apple TV, and I don't even think we're holding on to Disney Plus for much longer.
No. Well,
I want to talk about The Mandalorian, which is like the number one reason most people are talking about Disney Plus right now. Well, let's just say this first. The back catalog of shows, we went through the entire back catalog of shows and movies last night on their interface, which we both noted is a lovely interface. It's mm-hmm. very smooth. I know they had launch problems, but the actual design of Disney Plus is very smooth. It's much better than... Oh, we also have Prime Video. That's the other one. It's better than Prime Video, and it's better than
Prime
Hulu.
Prime Video is your nightmare.
And it's better than CBS All Access. So, I mean, it's Disney. You would expect them to get the tech correct. They have more money than Jesus.
It's as good as Netflix, I'd say. Or even better, maybe.
But the catalog I found, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to watch Lizzie McGuire. I'm not the demographic for any of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I scrolled through the entire catalog of Disney movies that are on there, like classics, like Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, all that stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, we don't have kids. I don't watch that stuff.
But like I said, if you have kids, then...
Exactly. But I'm just saying, we're not the demographic. I mm-hmm. don't think we're going to keep it. I do love Star Wars and Marvel, but I actually, like I said, for now, I actually own copies of those movies. I don't need to watch them all the time. So, whatever. The Mandalorian. That's the big show that everyone, all the critics were talking about, and everyone seems really excited about this show, and I get it. It's the first really big budget Star Wars television, live action Star Wars television show ever done. lot of big names attached to it.
They spent a lot of
faces.
Money.
It's extremely expensive mm-hmm. looking. It's got a pedigree, and I get it. I was really kind of bored by the first episode, but I can see that it's a ton of setup, that they're setting things up for something else, mm-hmm. For like a long-term storyline or something. But
yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm not a fan of that type of show, but I can see the appeal. I can see why people are talking so much about it, and especially if you were a fan of the genre, which I'm not. But I watch it with you. I mean,
we only watched the first episode. The second episode dropped this morning. I haven't had a chance to watch it. I will. And I'm not, this is not a review because I don't think the first episode gave you enough to actually review on. I mean, the lead character never takes his mask off, so you never see his face.
Drove me crazy.
That's a cute little gimmick, but that's really going to get old really quickly for me. I don't think they're going to sustain it for much longer.
Right.
For all I know, today's episode, the one that dropped today, he finally takes his mask off. Anyway, good action sequences. It felt very Star Wars. It feels like an on-point and in-depth exploration of that universe to someone who knows it really well. You don't, but that's fine. Mm-hmm. I caught a million references, and they were fun. They placed it in a specific, you know, universe. Don't know if that's enough for me to keep going. We'll see. I have until the third episode of The Mandalorian to decide whether I want to keep this trial or not. So we'll see. I just am kind of over this whole splintering of culture and the fact that we can't, like, I'm talking about this TV show, but I'm like, well, who did watch it this week? I mean, did anybody watch it? It's not the same as it used to be
mm-hmm.
when we were all watching the same shows and stuff.
I think it's a little different when you have HBO, for example. Like, you subscribe to HBO, and then there's, like, so many shows, at least I that's how I feel, that you want to watch.
Right.
But, I mean, a lot of people will have to subscribe to CBS All Access just for Discovery, right? Is that Discovery the one?
Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard.
Yeah, so you will do Disney because of this show now. And then how many subscriptions? I mean, you're going to need.
And there's that DC streaming thing that has like that Titans show, which I would have loved to have seen because I grew up reading the Titans comic book, but I'm not paying for
that.
And so you feel, and we work partially as TV critics. That's at least part of our jobs, and we're just kind of deciding to opt out.
I mean, in our case, we get 80% of what we watch, we get screeners for them. We're in a different situation, but if you don't have free access to anything, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, and we also don't have time.
Right.
We don't have time to watch all these shows and, you know, do our business and whatever. So it's just more and more I feel this splintering effect in mm-hmm. the culture. And as for what we do, it'll be interesting in the coming years to see how it affects what we do.
Right.
We just ride that out? I think we are riding that out in the sense that we're focusing on the parts of the culture that we think our readership
mm-hmm.
wants us to. Like The Crown, you know,
right.
We can't get away from doing stuff like that.
When you think about it, hardly. It's a good idea because you're slicing the cake even more. But
I don't think it's sustainable.
But I was just about to say that. So, but is that slice enough to keep you as a company going?
Yeah.
That's the issue here, which is not my problem, but
It's a problem for the culture, I think.
Well, for the culture, yes.
When billionaires own so much of
it. Yeah, well, that I agree. When they have so much control over everything.
All right, let's take a break.
Yes.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about the latest episode of RuPaul's Drag Race UK. We'll be right back.
Talking celebrities, pop culture, TV, and fashion. This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're back on the Opinion Fest, and now we're diving straight into this week's family challenge on Drag Race UK. Since we're heading into the finale, and this week opens with the top four and ends with the top three, this one's going to be a little more spoilery. We'll alert you when we get to the actual end of the episode and start talking about who was in the top and bottom.
Right.
But for now, I gotta say, once again, I am so charmed by this cast because we've done the puppet show mini challenges many times before. And like the reading challenge, the library challenge, they aced it in a way where everyone was charmed. Like, no one got their feelings hurt. It wasn't so mean. Not that I don't care if drag queens are mean. I really don't. I think it's part of the culture. But television being television, sometimes it's not fun to watch when they get a little too mean and when someone's feelings get hurt.
I think one of the things that I love about this season, this group, is that they're collectively happy to be there.
They are thrilled
to be there. As a group.
Right.
They are competing and they want to win, of course, but they're happy as a whole. They're just happy to be representing the Drag UK.
They're
And that they're the first.
Right.
And they're just happy. You can tell when they go back to the room after one of them gets eliminated, and then how they talk about the person who got eliminated and all that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of drama, of course, a little bit of tension, but they're happy. They're just happy to be there.
They're in an interesting position because they are the first.
Right.
And if you ever watch the first season of the American Drag Race, they didn't know what the hell was going on. They absolutely hadn't. So they weren't thrilled. They were just like, what the hell is this show? But these queens, there's a 10-year history of Drag Race.
They know it, but they
still get to be the first ones from the UK. And, I mean, apparently there was some drama in finally getting this show over there, and the drag community over there really wanted it and fought for it, and a lot of drag queens really wanted to be on it. So, well, they've talked about it.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't know.
You can tell there's a real sense of appreciation that they're there.
Right.
I think in future seasons of Drag Race UK, you're going to see the same kind of drama that you see on...
Right.
Because queens start showing up
knowing
what the show is going to ask of them and knowing the mistakes that other queens have made
What character they want to play and that kind of stuff.
But it's actually playing in the background as we're talking, the puppet challenge. It was just charming. They all made fun of each other. They were even a little harsh, but no one got hurt and it never went too far. So that's one of the reasons I love this group of queens.
I love, for all those reasons. And also the fact that it's a UK type of humor that sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. Sometimes they use words that you have to find out what they mean.
Right.
That type of stuff.
Right,
it's just,
right.
It's fun. And like sometimes, especially Baga, you know, she says something and they all laugh. And I was like, all right, why are they laughing? I have to look that up. That kind of stuff. It's just fun. It's fun.
I'm going to miss this when it's over. It went so fast.
Yeah. I can't believe that, you know, it's final four now. I was watching the episode. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe there's just four left.
Mm-hmm.
But as you said, they only had 10, right?
Yeah.
Contestants. But it went really, really fast. And I'm really enjoying every episode.
So am I.
It's great.
This week was the family challenge. And
the family that slays together.
The family that slays together, where they brought in the mothers and sisters of the remaining queens for drag makeovers. I'm going to plug our book because we do actually have an entire chapter about these challenges, about how they have been part of the show since its beginning and about how they are used to illuminate the history of queer families and how queer people either deal with their families of origin or how they make their own families around them. In this instance, with this, and this is becoming more and more true as the show progresses and younger queens show up, it's more or less actual blood family members now. You see that more and more. Or you see their husbands show up for these challenges.
Right.
Whereas in earlier seasons, a lot of times it was a friend or a pal of some sort. Because older queens come from a generation where a lot of them were rejected by their families.
It was always a bittersweet kind of situation because when the mom showed up, you were excited about it. But then a queen would only get a friend because she didn't have anyone from the... you know, family to represent her. So it was like, oh, okay. And I was shocked that they all got moms and sisters, which
I agree. And it also, again, this is in her book, it also pays homage to the figure of the drag mother, which is a very old and common figure in drag lore, in drag culture. Not just in the ball scene, but in the cabaret and the performing scene. There's been drag mothers going back close to a century. So there's this long tradition in drag of, quote, mothers and daughters, or or families and houses. And then there's also this long history in queer life of families navigating, or queer people navigating their own families or creating their families around them.
Right.
And all of this is bound up in Drag Race. And I'm not overanalyzing. If you watch the episodes, a lot of times Rue says this so often that it's nearly one of his catchphrases. He says, you know, as gay people, we create our own families. Right, he right, says right. this all the time, especially in the family challenge. I don't think he said it in this one because everyone's related. But no, I don't think we're overanalyzing it when we say that this stuff is caught up
right,
in
right,
it.
Right.
It's sort of the same thing like when Rue introduces the library challenge, he always says, in the grand tradition of Paris is Burning. The show was open about what it's doing in
right,
terms
right.
of how it's referencing uh-huh. queer culture. So anyway, get me started on my book and I cannot stop. Before we go further into this, we should talk about our socks.
Yes.
Because Lorenzo and I have decided this summer, this Christmas, that we don't want to put any pressure on each other to buy for each other. And we hate 90% of what's in our sock drawers and we need a refresh. So Lorenzo and I are doing a total sock buy for Christmas. We're
yeah.
each buying each other socks.
The thing is that I really don't need anything and we always end up buying something that we already have or that we don't like what the other one bought.
There's that. I won't lie.
Uh-huh. Anyway, so we're like, you know what? Let's just do one item, one thing we need.
And it's fun.
Yeah,
like, we're going to have so much fun just buying tons and tons of socks for
right,
each other.
Right.
And the reason we're bringing this up is because I know for a fact that I am buying him, and he better be buying me,
yes.
some socks from Bombas.
Yes.
Which is sponsoring this portion of the podcast. Sometimes we get way too comfortable in our old habits, but if you're still wearing the same old uncomfortable socks you got years ago, maybe it's time to upgrade to Bombas. See my point? See, we got some Bombas athletic socks, the ankle socks, this
amazing.
Summer, and they are literally the best athletic socks
they
I've
are.
Ever had.
They really are. It's funny because I'm very much into fashion, you know, full disclosure here, very much into fashion.
Yeah, shock.
But I never really paid attention to underwear and socks in the past. Like I was
right.
like, oh, I don't really need to. And then I started buying the real stuff, like the Bombas socks. And I was like, holy.
It makes a difference.
It does. It feels different. You can tell that they spent a lot of time producing that product, a lot of thought into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then
well engineered.
Yes, and it feels great.
High quality.
Yes, yes. So
did
it is
you
nice
know
to
that
have.
Socks are the number one most requested item in homeless shelters? Bombas
wow.
socks were created to change that. For every pair you buy, Bombas donates a pair to someone in need. Even more reason
mm-hmm.
to buy Bombas this holiday season. Bombas socks are soft, like made with the softest cotton in the world. Soft. They're built with extra cushioning, so whether you're walking the dog, chilling at home or saving the world, you'll be comfortable. And Bombas socks provide support in places you didn't even know you needed it, like your arches. Each sock is built with a special arch support system that's not too tight. It's more like a nice hug for your foot. So go to bombas.com, bombas.com/TLO today and get 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/TLO, bombas.com/TLO, 20% off your first purchase. Love these socks.
Yes, absolutely.
Tremendous, tremendous holiday gift, I'm telling you.
Yeah,
actually outdoes any others, you know, I mean, so a lot of people think, oh, socks for Christmas, that's so easy. I'm telling you, these socks are so fun and
I
so vibrant
them.
And so
hey,
colorful.
I need them and I want them.
They will go over mm-hmm. well. Trust Tilo on
yes.
this.
Yes.
Bombas. Thank you. All right. Drag Race.
So, Drag Race. Shout out to the guest judge, Michaela Ko.
Did you scream when you
oh
saw her?
Oh, my God. I screamed so hard because I absolutely love her. Love her. She's brilliant. She's an amazing creative person.
Mm-hmm.
She's just amazing. And if you haven't watched it yet, she has a fantastic show created by her, and she plays a main character called Chewing Gum. And
it's hilarious.
To this day, is one of my favorite British shows ever.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
It's a hilarious show.
If you
show.
Liked Fleabag, you'll love
yes,
this.
Yes, if you like Fleabag, you're going to love it. She's amazing in it. She created the whole thing. Hilarious. Very, very funny. She's extremely talented. And she did great on
yeah.
her jokes. And
she's
stuff.
Also... freaking
oh
fabulous.
My God, she's gorgeous. She was wearing this beautiful
yeah.
Outfit. Love her.
Yeah.
Very excited. I was like, oh my God, it's Michaela. Love
I
her.
I know. So the family challenge with mums and sisses, and there was a lot of family resemblance walking in the front doors. So I felt like no one had a hard time with their partner.
Right,
I don't
right,
think
right, right.
I mean except Baga, who created, we're going to talk about that, but I mean they they all got partners.
Yes.
I really don't see how any of them had it all that hard.
No, it was
Cheryl's
easy to
sister
do.
Yeah. Looked exactly like Cheryl. Right, there was some drama, which I don't think that might have made as much of a splash in an American version of this show, where they would have made an issue of the fact that his sister is heavier than him and his costumes don't fit her. Like, they really leaned into that, and I was like, yeah, I don't know if that would go over
that
all that
go well,
well on
no.
VH1.
No.
It was borderline getting a little cruel the way they were making such an issue of it. But I guess they had to look for drama where they could find it. But all of them, like, Bagga's mother looks just like him. Vivian's mother looks just like her. Cheryl Hole's sister looks just like her. And Davina's sister doesn't look like her, but she's loaded with personality.
Oh my gosh.
Just like
yeah.
her.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
This was not a tough challenge. And in fact, when it got down to the judging and the elimination, it was like, well, they were just going to send this person home at this
time because
it was time.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with how she did.
Yeah, we'll talk about that after the spoiler announcement.
Well, I mean, how far do you want to get into this? Are we going to talk about the makeovers?
No, I mean, I think everything went easy and just smooth. You know, I don't think that... yeah, there was no issue. It was just having fun with your you know, family member. And they did a good job. They in general, I think they did a good job.
All right, so do you want to rate them?
Not, I guess. Yes. Yeah, I guess. Uh-huh.
Oh,
let's
I
go.
I guess you don't?
No, I wasn't prepared for that. But let's do it.
Well, there's only four of them, so mm-hmm. I just thought it would be worth our time. Maybe we should say that from this point on, we're talking spoilers.
Right. I think that's fair.
Okay, let me just sync this up. First one up is the Vivian and her mother.
Right.
The first one up is Cheryl Hole and Sissy Hole.
Yeah, and they look, my God, they look like exactly the same.
It took me a second to realize which one was which.
Yeah, me too.
They
yeah.
were so, so damn close. And this is where, again, we're getting to rather arbitrary critiques here where Michelle Visage doesn't like body stockings. I get that. That's a preference. And she's correct in that it's an easy choice. But that's not reason enough. They looked good.
I know. Sometimes I
it's
feel like...
It's such an arbitrary thing where it's like, wow, you two really nailed it. Your choreography was great. But you were wearing body stockings. And
Yeah, I think sometimes it gets... Especially when it gets to this point here that it's only four being judged. They just have to come up with something, you know? Negative to say about them. And it made no sense. I understand that that's not what you like to see, but it's not like they were... Cheryl Ho has shown that all the time.
It's also...
It's not like Vanjie, you know,
type of situation. Exactly. Well, I know she's done it a lot. Maybe not as much as Vanjie, but she has done it a lot.
Yeah.
I also didn't think... I thought the looks this week were fine, but nobody was gag worthy.
No,
so
it wasn't
I didn't
great
really
looks.
Think that was there was that much like okay, she's in a body stocking. Does she look that much worse than I don't know, Davina?
I think they were more concerned making sure they look the same and makeup was good than the outfits.
Right.
I don't think that the outfit they're not that great. It's just okay.
I loved the Viv and her mother.
Yes.
It was a unique pair of looks. The Viv's especially was pretty strong.
And her mother was sweet.
Was sweet. Like, it's a strong look. It's a striking look. And there was just enough of a resemblance. Not maybe not the best, but strong enough. Davina and Delisha were, perfect.
Yes,
they looked
yes.
exactly identical. But, the Viv is kind of a bitch about Davina's red hair and sparkly dresses. But there is a certain sameness over and over and over again to her looks. And this looks like a generic Davina look.
Mm-hmm.
And Michaela hated the dresses. She was having flashbacks to doing drugs in European clubs. I don't know what that was all about. Did you catch that?
Yes,
you didn't catch
that? Yes.
They're just tacky looking dresses. They were just were sheer and
they
and,
were very simple and basic.
Yeah.
Again, it was more about them moving around on stage and doing their thing than the looks. The looks were okay.
Same thing with Bag of Chips and her mother Sack of Spuds. They were supposed to be Kardashian. You could not tell that by looking at them.
When she mentioned that, I was like, what?
If you're a drag queen and you cannot do Kardashian drag and make it look like them, like, what kind of drag queen are you?
I didn't get Kardashian at all until she mentioned them.
They were just generic looking. And
as
Alan Carr said, her mother's makeup looked like Halloween. It was not drag makeup.
No,
it was Halloween makeup. So, in all honesty, Baga should have gone home. But they weren't going to send Baga home.
Well, let's start with the winner. Davina won.
Which I probably would have given it to the Vivian over her.
Right, but Davina whatever. Won because I guess they were cheerful and playful.
That way they
whatever.
All have three yeah. repeater badges.
Right, yeah, you know, that's a point. Yeah, mm-hmm. you're right, you may have a point there. So when he came down to the bottom, Cheryl and Baga, I knew Baga wasn't going to home, no matter what. No matter what she did. There was no way.
I mean, the fix was in.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way. I mean, I was like, all right, I'll just watch this, but...
I will say she gave a better lip sync, but again, this was a classic Drag Race case of she gave a better lip sync because she's so much better suited to the song. Uh-huh. It was Amy Winehouse.
Yes.
Which is so much better for her than it is for Cheryl. She just, it's not that she so much looks like her, it's that she can bring that sense of tiredness and world weariness and that sort of street
feeling
to it.
Cheryl was far better. I mean, that's the bottom line here.
In the lip sync?
I thought so.
No, not at all. No.
I think in terms of look and stuff, Baga was...
Cheryl?
Yeah.
No, Baga slayed that lip sync.
I guess. I don't know.
No.
I'm divided. I think they both did okay.
I mean, Cheryl did okay, but she wasn't suited for the song. Baga
well,
was...
Well, that I agree. But I knew that Cheryl was going to go home no matter what.
Right.
Maybe Baga did a better job. I don't know. Maybe I have to watch it again. But I thought that they were both okay. I didn't see anyone better than
you're wrong.
All right.
You're wrong.
Okay. But Baga was going to stay. That's the bottom line.
We knew what the final three were going to be. Yeah. And it's exactly... Everybody went home in the exact order I could have told you they were going to go home. So good job, Cheryl, for staying in as long as you did. But he didn't have one badge. He hadn't won one challenge. So, you know, it was time.
Yeah, I've been reading the comment section on our site about the queens. And I don't know. Now that I read a lot of comments, I was like, you know what, Davina... Maybe she should win this whole thing.
We'll see.
Campbell. Yeah. She's really good. Bag is great. But Davina is also good. I don't know. We'll see. Do you have a favorite?
Going into the final, not really. I any one of them would be fine by me.
And that's fair.
Yeah.
I think they're all great.
I do too. I think that's it for this week.
Yes.
So, kittens, thank you once again for listening to our little cartoon rodeo. And we'll be back next week with more opinions and thoughts. Until then, bye-bye.
Bye.